Hey, everybody. This is Shop Talk Show number 270, where we're going to be talking a bunch about SVG and sketch and kind of like a sketch SVG workflow situation. Talking about both those subjects, we have a guest, Peter, on who you'll meet in a moment, who is a great designer and knows tons about that and has training courses on all that stuff. So we thought we'd tap into his knowledge a little bit and talk about those tools because I think they're on a lot of developers' mind. We're going to be talking about, you know, like I said, workflow stuff, animation stuff, plugins for Sketch, an icon workflow, you know, checking that SVG output, how working in software like Sketch ultimately produces SVG, but it's still kind of on you to know about the code and know what you should be worried about and thinking about. It's all pretty complex stuff. The tooling for it is just kind of shaking out. And, you know, I guess as anything in web design and development, it's really, you know, the more you know, the more powerful you are. So let's get into that conversation. Dave, please kick things off.
Hey there, Shopping Maniacs. You're listening to another episode of the Shop Talk Show, and we just sketched things off. That's a joke, Chris. I'm Dave Rupert.
You didn't have a lot of time to think about that one, did you? Normally,
I just sort of zoomed into it, and yeah, it wasn't a scalable vector joke.
Whoa.
What's the theme of today's show, Chris? I'm really just taking this podcast.
Well, we have a guest this week, and it's true. Dave was trying to make jokes about SVG and stuff. We have
trying to make jokes.
I think it's going to come up a lot in this episode. We have Peter Noel on. Hey, Peter, how are you?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Fantastic. Peter, I got an email from Peter. Peter does you do tons of stuff with not only SVG, but Sketch as well. And it's kind of like a big thing that you've become known for and are way deep into. So I wonder if can you tell us about all of that stuff? What are you into these days? What are you doing? Who are you?
Yeah. It's kind of funny because I started using Sketch right as it began to pick up speed and started writing a couple articles about things that I discovered that seemed to be plaguing a lot of designers. And before I knew it, it was just a big part of what I was doing, writing articles and ultimately making courses. Mm-hmm. So for the last year, I've been creating courses under a new, kind of a new venture. It's called Sketchmaster. And there are just a ton of new designers who are learning from this. And I realized that there was a kind of a noticeable lack of professional training out there on this new tool that's now being used at all of the major companies, and it's being used to design most of the big software that we're all using.
It is pretty wild. What year did Sketch drop, do you think? It wasn't that long ago.
Well, Sketch has been out for, let's see, least 5 years. Well, I mean, I've been using it for 5 years, and it was out for a few years before that. I think it was about 5 years ago that they won the Apple Design Award, and that really got them on everyone's radar, including mine.
But even 5 years ago, it was like not the same as it
is. Totally.
Like,
yeah.
It's been a pretty, as far as design software goes, it's quite a I don't know, hockey stick growth kind of thing for Sketch.
Absolutely.
Like, it's really taken over, and it has like become the predominant screen design tool. So what was that? You feel the same way? Is that what it's like? Like, what's up with Sketch just taking over?
Yeah, you know, I think that it's been a moment in which designers have realized that that we aren't confined to just a few tools made by Adobe. And I think it has also exploded the growth of design tools just in general. I think we're seeing so many more come out now. And designers are far more aware of how they want their workflow to look and what tools they want to use. Because before, there was never that consideration. It was almost, I think a lot of designers, myself included, might have felt ashamed that maybe we weren't always the most proficient user in you know, Illustrator or InDesign.
It was almost like a different tool. It was like, if you're good at Photoshop, you're like a good photo editor. And Illustrator was literally for illustrators. But if you're a screen designer, none of these tools are really for you. Although there was that, what was the one that everybody liked? Fireworks or whatever?
Fireworks.
Yeah. I love fireworks. Team Fireworks. Woo!
And for digital design, yeah, it was all about like, well, how do you hack all of these tools into your workflow? So I think it's really refreshing to see more tools like Sketch picking up speed.
I'm sure it's probably a minor sore spot for Adobe that they kind of dropped the ball on this one. I feel like if I was at Adobe, listening. I would just be like, just copy it.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, they've definitely started to do that and put their own spin on it with experience design with Adobe XD.
Yeah, right.
And it'll be interesting to see where that goes. But, you know, Sketch has done so many things right, and the things that I think people love about Sketch are just inherently different from a lot of Adobe CNA.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, okay, Sketch blows up, and you mentioned training a little bit because you've kind of bet big on that in a good way, and they have the Sketch Master course. It's all the kind of the training and stuff for it. There used to be, and I guess there still is, a ton of training for the Adobe stuff. I think of like lynda.com is just filthy with the training stuff for Adobe, and they have stuff in there in for Sketch now, but certainly there's much less of it.
Yeah, you know, because Adobe's tools have been around for so long, there's a huge gamut of training and a lot of really specialized training too. With Sketch, you know, what we're really talking with when it comes to training in general is we have the skills such as design kind of from a high level. Then we have the technical familiarity with a tool, which you could almost just simplify down to like, do you know its interface? Do you know its feature set? And then there's kind of this oft forgotten part of training that's really important, and that's workflows. It's the sort of thing that you just pick up when you've been using a tool for years. You know all the little workarounds for how you need to create something. And that was really what I identified as being missing from Sketch, from this new tool and from the training landscape. Because opening up Sketch, it's not intimidating at all. It's really a fantastic interface because it feels simple, it feels really easy to use, and that allows you to feel more creative while you're using it. But it almost betrays the fact that it's still a professional design tool that has all of this capability under the hood, and that you still need very specific workflows in order to do certain things, whether that's designing an icon or designing the user interface for a mobile app or a responsive website, or as I've been focusing a lot more on recently, workflows to create various types of SVG graphics.
So you touched on this a little bit, is that there's kind of almost two different types of training in a way. There's like, if you're going to learn how to use Sketch, I mean, at the really low basic level, maybe you don't even need any training, right? Because there's like a rectangle tool and you click it and you draw a rectangle and whatever, right? Like, you, so there's, there's obviously a lot more to it. And I'm sure your courses go all into like, what's the feature set? So do you find that like, maybe I should do this training about the kind of the complicated stuff, the stuff that actually needs teaching?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not really a good use of anybody's time to just say, hey, here's how you create a rectangle. Let's just go through all of these menus and go down the feature list.
Right.
There's a lot of training out there that does that. Plenty of it on Udemy and Skillshare. And I mean, it's just kind of an ever-expanding list now with Sketch. But very few people actually talking about, okay, well, so you've got a more complicated icon that you want to create, for example, and you know that it can be created from a few basic shapes, but when you start combining them, you encounter this little issue or that little issue, and it's like, how do you actually get past that? How do you create something kind of like for a real project, for a professional job? And what I've found is that professional designers are just yearning for that.
It really does need some training.
Yeah, well, it's like in it's kind of a combination of user interface and user experience design being a relatively new field where everybody's kind of doing things a little differently and everyone's it, trying to figure out like, well, what's the most efficient way of doing this? And then we have the tools, and sometimes it varies based in different tools. So for example, I know that a lot of people who advocate for a 1x and 2x kind of separated workflow are often using Adobe tools, whereas other tools like Sketch have a kind of a more effortless way of designing for multiple pixel densities. But you've still got these workflows that everybody's kind of figuring out. Every user experience project is a little bit different, and then the workflows end up looking a bit different. But most people who are really using these for real work are just dying for some training to stop wasting their time. And like, you know, that was the whole reason I started writing articles. It was only to say, hey, I wish somebody had told me this when I was learning the tool, because it was almost deceivingly simple.
You almost have a leg up in that, because you're a good designer anyway, that you can do this training, and like, it's almost like the courses are sprinkled with how to design too, or like the things that you're designing aren't garbage. They're nice. They're like what we want to be like as a designer.
Absolutely. It's actually really funny to see how much training out there uses just crummy examples that you would never want your projects to look like. And yeah, I really try to kind of, like you said, sprinkle in various design practices and parts of the craft, because they're often related to a technical thing. So for example, with SVG, there, you know, my upcoming course, it might even be out by the time this podcast is out, that kind of goes over these Sketch and SVG workflows. I spend a little bit of time talking about how many types of graphics need to be more optically centered within a bounding box. And there are only certain ways to export an SVG out of Sketch that kind of honors a user-defined bounding box. And that bounding box in SVG is a view box, and in Sketch, it's an artboard. But if you're not going through a workflow that, for example, in Sketch uses an artboard, and if you're not exporting it in one of a couple ways, then you're going to kind of lose out on this general design best practice of having something maybe not mathematically centered, but optically centered within its container. So yeah, I mean, I find that they're always really interconnected. And
yeah, there's definitely not a lot of training along those lines. It actually has really clear, it comes up in our work, but it's just something that you just assume that you're just going to have to battle yourself and just figure it out or something.
Yeah, it's one of those things too where you can often understand a feature really quickly. But as soon as you start using it in a real project, you're like, wait a second, I just can't make this accurate, or I just can't get this one last, like this last 5% to a finished product. And those are the things that I've often struggled through, and then I just try to pass that along to someone else.
So the courses are, so far, Getting Started with Sketch, User Experience Design in Sketch. Really, that's pretty sweet. And then the new one that's not out yet is SVG Workflow.
Exactly, yeah. So the first two kind of cover the fundamentals. And I mean, like I said, the reason that I wanted to create this training in the first place was really to cover more advanced topics. So the SVG course is the first of those. And I'm excited about some others to come. Maybe responsive design, advanced typography, something that I'm super excited about always, but a lot of digital designers, especially, don't have the kind of classic graphic design kind of background to fall back on. And even people who do, I often find when they're using Sketch, think that a bunch of features just don't exist, and they just end up going back to Illustrator.
I think that SVG thing is a particular interest. It's an interest of mine, of course. I also have not a course, but a book about SVG called Practical SVG.
Yeah, great.
That was about just using it as a front-end developer. So not so much design-related, but just like, I got some SVG, now what do I do with it kind of thing. Integrating in it. But you do that as well, right? So you're a front-end developer as well?
Yeah. I do quite a bit of front-end design and development. It's interesting. I actually love how your book approaches it from a front-end developer's perspective. And it does so very appropriately because it keeps a pace that would be that it keeps a pace that makes sense for a developer. A lot of designers are kind of grappling with SVG in a different way. And a lot of the time that falls apart when going from a design tool like Sketch or Illustrator into the SVG format. There's so much that can be done before exporting as SVG. There are a few different ways to export as an SVG in any of these tools. And then there are certain things you can do afterwards too. And I end up in the course actually teaching a little bit of front-end code, just kind of the basics of SVG markup, because I find that once you know that, you can do anything. And if you're a designer and you really want to use this format, you don't need to be a front-end developer, but you're going to get a lot by knowing some of those basics. I think what I'm increasingly finding is that this whole conversation I've tried to abstain from about whether designers should code or not is remarkably black and white. And there are so many ways in which a designer who isn't a developer can learn a few little things that make handoff or working, collaboration with a developer a lot easier. And
well, let's name those things. I can think of some off the top of my head are like name, like organize your document nicely, because there's plenty of designer or developers who are happy to like open your Sketch file and just take right. it in there and find. So organization seems like one of those kind of things to me, but also like sub-organization of like naming your layers nicely and because that doesn't kind of the name of your layers in Sketch kind of manifest itself as you export the file?
Yeah, it does. Okay. Yeah, the names of every layer become the IDs of your SVG elements, which you might just remove in an optimizer, but you should at least know that that's going to happen. Because your SVG might not be optimized, and then you should know that if you're using inline SVG on a website and you've got several SVGs with different gradients or different referenced use elements, that they could have some ID conflicts because
there's a body three times.
Or even because Sketch is going to say like linear gradient one, and then you're going to have three linear gradient ones. They're
just
a number.
I always found that obnoxious. Like, that we're going to use this on the web, right? That's what Sketch is for. So like, why isn't there like some way to take a thing and be like, okay, you've just decided you're going to make it the ID, expose something so that I can say, no, I don't want it to be an ID. I want it to be a class, and I want to name that class myself.
It's actually kind of remarkable how a lot of that can be done in optimizers, but then there are these gaps in what optimizers do, and there are obviously some build tools that can change IDs back into classes and whatnot, but
sure,
some like SVGO, for example, which is both a Sketch plugin now and in the fantastic SVG OMG tool and a build tool as well, that doesn't even have an optimization to change to classes that I'm aware of, or at least it's not in SVG OMG.
It's not really like part of its ethos, right? It's like, I want to make SVG smaller.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
Like, it's probably kind of made that as a conscious choice. A lot of these build tools are like, oh, if you wanted to do that, you'd use some kind of XML parsing tool that's designed for that. We don't want to get into making choices about what you want. I mean, I kind of see why they made that choice, but that just complicates us as developers' workflow even more, because you're like, yeah. Oh, I want class names on my stupid paths in SVG, and Sketch can't do it, and my optimizer can't do it, so yeah. What, I'm winging it and writing it by myself?
Find and replace? Yeah. what we're touching on is that there are really dozens, but in particular, maybe half a dozen common uses for SVG. And there just isn't a one-size-fits-all approach or
Ooh,
way
I like
that
this
a...
game. Backgrounds, icons, animations.
Yeah.
Logos.
Responsive graphics. Yeah.
Whole entire websites.
Charts. Yeah.
Whole entire websites. let's see, I've got a whole section of my course that's basically listing everything out. But for example, you might, you've also got Android icons, you've got Safari pinned tab icons, you've got certain places. For example, there are icon libraries online, like the Noun Project, that require all submissions to be a single path SVG. Well, creating a single path SVG is such a different workflow than creating something that needs to be animated or, you know, for example, say you have some text and you actually want that text to be editable on the front end. Well, that's just not going to happen with a single path SVG. There are really so many different ways to create the same, like identical graphic that, I think that's where a lot of designers get confused. It's like, we're so used to just exporting JPEGs and PNGs and being like, boom. So maybe I optimize it a little bit more.
Yeah, and if it doesn't, then you kind of blame the tool.
Totally.
But really, you do, unfortunately, some understanding of what SVG is and its syntax itself is probably a good thing to know.
Yeah, what I found and the way that I kind of structured my course is that I'm able to go over about a dozen best practices that kind of like everybody is going to benefit from. And then beyond that point, we go into SVG markup for a couple sections. And we have to do that before you can really understand how optimization works, how sprite sheets work, how fill rules work, for example. And all of that is really important for designers to know. We kind of need to get past the idea that like code is this big scary thing, especially with SVG, where it's really just an outline with a little extra punctuation around it.
Yeah, I guess that would be my question. Like, how do you QA the quality of the SVG that gets spit out by the design program? I have stories in the past where it was like a close button and it was like a 3.3 kilobyte SVG. And I was like, this should be about 30 bytes. You know, it should just be an X with a circle or whatever, you know, like totally. This is like two lines of SVG, very simple, but like the machine spit out this big outline. Or like my client has a logo and, you know, there's a little bit of like a PNG raster image. Well, lo and behold, I'm digging through the SVG and it's like two PSDs encoded, like in, you know,
like 64, it's like a 300 kilobyte.
Yeah. And I just was like, ooh, surprise. Like no one's ever looked at this because it's in production. And so like, how do you QA that? How does a designer or a developer, cause this clearly it made it through development, but like, how do they like even know the, right. like they should be looking for this because, you know, these like, you know, just gnarly pieces of code. How do you QA and look for that?
Absolutely. I think that different design tools, and I've done some quite a bit of testing in the last several months, different design tools have different philosophies for what an SVG should look like. Illustrator, for example, and Affinity Designer have more of an approach that things should be flattened and that the most important thing is that it looks consistent and that it's completely reliable. And so a lot of people...
That reliability is a big deal because like you get it, like you can't blame them for wanting to like stifling support requests.
Right. But then you've got like all of these little strokes that that would be supported by SVG, for example, but have been turned into paths or, you know, outlined. And outlining is one thing that... I constantly have to talk to designers about saying, you know, actually, outlining is not required when you export as SVG. SVG strokes are really efficient, and it's nice to be able to maybe adjust them after the fact. When you outline and convert things into a path, you can really dramatically increase the file size. But the way that Sketch tends to export SVGs is a little bit closer to what I think is the ideal for a design tool. And I don't think Sketch does everything perfectly with SVG export, but I think that their general approach is really sound. And that's that a design tool, and this is just my opinion, but a design tool should be, should make as much of that process efficient while maintaining maintaining enough information in the final SVG that you can optimize it in various different ways. You could compress it. You could kind of rewrite parts of it yourself. When you flatten everything down too much, you might end up with an SVG that is, that appears more simple, but you often like are far more limited when it comes to animation or adjusting certain things dynamically in the SVG, which is like one of the main reasons that we all want to use SVGs. They're just so capable.
I totally agree. It's very tricky, and I have limited experience, but I see that like the Illustrator export screen all the time, and I feel like it's gotten a lot better, and it does certain things. Like if you have text and I feel like workflow wise, and I'm sure you know 10 times more than I do, but like I almost find there to be no reason to save SVG out of something like Illustrator for your native document ever. Like you should almost always have a .ai file and then
of course
export to SVG as you're like, okay, I'm done. I want to give this to the web. And there's usually options like if you have text in there, you have just a drop-down menu that says, do I want to on the fly now convert that to outlines or not? And there's reasons to choose either one of those at any given time. That's kind of smart. Just ask me. Please ask me.
Right, exactly. It's funny too, because Sketch has taken this approach that that as little interface as possible is kind of the way to go. So there are no options when you export an SVG out of Sketch. I mean, I think for that reason, they kind of compensate for it by giving you still a lot of information that you can use in the final SVG rather than making too many assumptions for you. But what you're touching on is really important, Chris. It's that SVG is not a native design tool format. And if it was, you would have a very limited, design tool. SVG is something that you export out as. It's not something that really ever makes sense to save to as a file format. You've got, for example, Figma which I think is a really rad design tool, and I'm looking forward to seeing kind of the place that it takes in the digital design industry. But the way that they export SVGs could not be more different. They, for them, it's a priority to allow designers to re-import an SVG file and have it kind of be exactly the same in the design tool as it was when it left. In order to do that, there's tons of custom attributes, and they've got their own namespace and all of this extra code. Not to mention that it's completely unreadable. Everything has like a mask around it. Everything's being referenced in a use element. It's just a massive behemoth. In order to kind of take that approach of allowing designers to re-import it, I think that SVG is incredibly capable, but should never be confused as being a kind of an archive format or a file format for an original design.
Yeah, that's tricky because I bet like original SVG spec authors would like probably fight you about that. You're like, no, we designed this to be absolutely an archival format, but that's
like
just
20 years ago.
Yeah, that's just not how it's shaken out these days. Like it definitely shouldn't be the format that you keep your design documents with design software like Sketch or Illustrator. Like, no, let Sketch and Illustrator have their proprietary action going on in there and have SVG be this like output format.
It's like a compile target.
I like that.
I mean, it's almost kind of like closer to a website where you wouldn't save your Photoshop design or whatever in HTML. You would expect it to be adapted, and you would want to control it as its own format. And you also, in that sense, wouldn't expect some tool that promises to be a Photoshop to website creator, like a one-click solution. You would kind of be mistrustful of that. And I think we should all be equally mistrustful of SVG export being kind of like a one-size-fits-all. I constantly get emails from people that say, this is what my original design looks like in Sketch. And I just can't figure out why I'm having this little issue with the SVG. And it's always something that is just like, okay, now create a duplicate of your artboard and like let's prepare this for a file format that is, albeit capable, very particular in how it needs to be structured.
Maybe let's do that. Let's go through let's keep it in Sketch. We'll keep it in SVG. You know, you got the course coming out. What is a good Sketch workflow? Can you mouth describe an excellent SVG Sketch workflow?
Yeah. So I've actually, and I'm pulling it up here. I've got I made this freely available. I've got an SVG prep checklist, which goes over a bunch of the best practices that I discuss in the course. And I created this first for myself. It's kind of a checklist that I go through. So I'll read some of that. And we're going to imagine that we're not trying to create an SVG that's for a very specific kind of limited specification. For example, Android icons or a Safari pin tab icon.
Yeah, which, this is just a screen design for a web app, whatever.
Exactly, yeah. So arguably the most important thing is to use an artboard around your layers. When you don't do that, all sorts of stuff gets messed up. And we just don't have time to get into the details, but always use an artboard. And then I always suggest using the export button on the artboard rather than using it on specific layers. It has to do with the coordinate space and all sorts of things get messed up.
And you said it earlier, but the artboard is synonymous to SVG's viewbox, and that just keeps everything hunky-dory.
Almost exactly. Okay. Yeah. In fact, the exact dimensions of the artboard in Sketch become the last two values in the viewbox attribute.
And they all start at 0, 0 in Sketch?
They all start at 0, 0.
Oh, that's nice. You know, I feel like an illustrator could have been like, we just decided to start
negative
this one
42.
At negative.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, why not? And decimal points. And fortunately, Sketch never does that. So there are certain best practices kind of already built in, which I think is good for a design tool to do. Always avoid bitmap images. That's, you know, like you were saying, Dave, it's like no one wants to start using their SVG, scale it up and say, wait a second, I thought SVG was supposed to be like vector graphics. Mm-hmm. And wait a second, I thought these were supposed to be smaller than my PNG. Especially because bitmap graphics, when exported from Sketch, are Base64 embedded into an SVG file. And you can have a 20 kilobyte JPEG that becomes a 300 kilobyte SVG file when it has to be Base64 embedded. Using unique layer names, like we said, unless you're removing them with an optimizer. A big one for Sketch is ungrouping all of your layers. Sketch does some funky stuff with translate transforms, and oftentimes you don't even need groups because they're kind of invisible for your final flattened design.
I think that's just funny that sometimes you'll get the positioning of something won't be at its XY coordinate where you think it would be. It's like at some XY coordinate, and then it's also been wrapped in a group and the group has been translated. You're like, I would have never done it that way.
Totally. And it's all kind of this this dance between the design tool trying to figure out what information should we keep in there and what information should we kind of flatten down. I often, a lot of these things on the checklist are just ways for designers to kind of make those decisions themselves before exporting. So for example, masks, which SVG supports, can often cause all kinds of issues. And they're not even really supported on some older browsers like early versions of Android's browser. So I always suggest recreating masks using Boolean operations, using combine shape operations like intersect. And flipping or rotating a layer will create a transform that carries through to the SVG, and you can flatten those or you can keep them, but you should know that, for example, if you wanted to animate a transform on an element that already has one, you might run into some difficulty. So flattening to a certain extent, things like borders are interesting because SVG only supports centered strokes. Sketch.
That was news the other week, wasn't it? To be like, Sketch now supports like it like fakes other way, because SVG itself is the technology only has that. I've bitched about that forever because it's like,
oh, I know,
it's always wrong on text. You know, like it's the worst of all the possible options.
Right. Yeah. And you know, the promise of SVG 2 is incredible, but we've just yet to see it, and it's been years. So SVG2 will support inside or outside borders, but the cool thing that Sketch does now is that it will, if you have an inside border, for example, which if anybody listening doesn't understand what that means, you've got a path, and then if the border is kind of contained inside the shape or outside the shape, or if the border hugs halfway along the path, halfway on either side of it, that's centered. So if you have an inside stroke, what I always used to do, and incredibly time consuming, is duplicate it and change it to a centered path and then rearrange all the vector points so that it looked identical, but was supported in SVG. Now Sketch does that for you. It works most of the time. It's kind of funny. I was talking with Mark Edwards about this, and we realized there are some scenarios where it's mathematically impossible, which is kind of, it kind of blows my mind, especially when you start dealing with curves and whatnot. But a lot of the time that's really useful. For designers, oftentimes we're doing things like using more layers than actually need to be in our final graphic, or using multiple fills. For example, we might want to kind of create a solid fill color and then a gradient on top of that on the same layer, maybe with an overlay blend mode, and we start getting funky with all of these different blend modes and multiple layers and effects. And oftentimes those can actually be flattened down to a single fill, to a single gradient. And it's not that Sketch can't export the other way, but it's often a buggier SVG file, because SVG has its limitations, and it's a lot bigger. So multiple fills is something that I always suggest people do. Creating new layers instead of using blend modes and trying to kind of like sample the colors that were in the overlapping area. Replacing shadows with gradients if possible. We're just trying to rely on shadows as little as possible. So those are some of the best practices that I kind of suggest in the course.
Cool. Yeah. Is there a different set of them? Like, do you get into the animation thing at all? I think there's a lot of people interested in that, and that SVG is such a good target for, you know, this UI animation or animation of any kind, really. Is it the same type of best practices, or is there
different? Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of these best practices are trying to kind of go across all of the use cases. We don't actually animate SVGs because that would be getting too far into web development for this course. But a lot of the best practices sections, and kind of later in the course, I've got sections about like, okay, now let's understand the code underneath all of these guidelines. And all of this relates to, do you want to animate your SVG? Do you need to have certain information in there? Or can you just flatten it away and often kind of save a few kilobytes? And I created a CodePen, and I've got a whole CodePen collection actually of stuff from the course, and it's all freely available. So we can have a link to that. But I've got a CodePen that shows like one icon that can be created four different ways. Honestly, it could be kind of created like six or eight different ways. But it's so fun once you start playing around with the SVG markup, especially in a tool like CodePen. You just realize, wait, I can create this icon in a dozen different ways. And some of them are going to be better for file size. Some of them are going to be more animatable. And you just kind of I think with SVG, it's always about assessing what your priorities are.
So another big case, you know, aside from animation, I agree, it's like largely best practices for all SVG, whether you're going to animate it or what. But and some, I think, I don't know, some people that really do like these cinematic SVG experiences, maybe there is some slightly different best practices. Like we're going to name the crap out of those layers and
totally
group things super intelligently. And I don't even know what the best.
Yeah, for example, like the, all of the stuff that Sarah Drasner has done, and with Green Sock especially.
Because you're going to need to target that stuff. You're gonna, right. Like that's how you think in Green Sock is. Let me target this bit and do something to it on this elaborate timeline. And
exactly. And Sarah has also created a number of SVGs that both animate and are responsive. And you know, when you start creating responsive stuff, you need to think about am I going to approach responsive in a way where I'm using the same SVG elements as they kind of adapt, or am I switching between them with just breakpoints? And you know, it's sure you could have three camera icons inside the same SVG and just switch between them at different breakpoints, but you might not have to. You might be able to use certain elements kind of across all of those sizes, and so. It's really like it's a lot like web design, honestly. As we're just getting at, there's really no way to know exactly, or there's no workflow or answer for every single graphic, and it's about honestly, it's about making design decisions. And this is, I think, one of the places where design and development intersect in a really interesting way. I think once designers know a little bit of SVG code, they'll start thinking about the different ways that something could be constructed. And it's honestly a design challenge that other types of design have always had to grapple with. It's what architects and industrial designers have to grapple with. And it's time that digital designers start thinking about the final construction of their work a little bit more.
Because it's quite literally its own document format, SVG. And so it's similar to like HTML. It's drawing with HTML or XML. And I think that's cool. But yeah, it does kind of have to put the like onus on the designer or
it
the
needs to
developer.
Have good tooling though. It's so funny that like you can be great. I think it would be hard to be great at SVG without any tooling. Like even if you really dug into the SVG syntax and were great at it and knew all about it and rock and roll, it's still like a lot of this stuff starts in tools. You need a pen tool. You need to be able to drag things up and down. You need to be able to align things. I don't know. It's just like SVG almost always starts in a tool. So it's like this tool and this code need to hang out a little better. And I'm sure you can teach a lot of that stuff. And it totally has an all.
I don't know, Chris. I just hand draw
hand
all
path
my
data.
Yeah, hand write path. I'm super into this indie web bespoke SVGs.
It's kind of a creative endeavor. I can decide if I want an arc, maybe a quadratic Bezier, maybe a cubic Bezier, but that's my decision.
You know, I feel like, you know, 7 hours to make an X is worth it, you know, for the file size.
I feel like you can tell the difference.
Yeah.
This idea of needing specific tooling is it's really spot on. It's something that I've contributed a little bit to. I actually halfway through creating this course, I realized I was teaching some workflows that I was like, this is just ridiculous. Computers exist to automate certain things like this for us. And I'm a huge fan of SVG OMG, but I ended up creating my own SVG optimizer. And it has completely different optimizations, and they're far more kind of choices as far as optimizations go. They don't affect every SVG. They don't they aren't just aimed at shrinking the file size, but rather kind of reconfiguring how your SVG works under the hood. We need this kind of tooling. I mean, Green Sock and their timeline, for example, is incredible, and that's so useful. I remember several years ago, I was doing an animating icon project for Apple. And back then it was all smile. It was all SVG's native animation, animation elements and whatnot. And it was the worst. It took me days to create one animating icon. And you know, you trying to do morphs and trying to do, you know, motion paths. And this is why tools exist. So it's really great to see GreenSock taking the lead on that with, when it comes to animation. I honestly wish that there was a bit more of a GUI for that, because I think that it would lower the bar. It would open the door wider for who can start using it. But I think we all just need to, you know, contribute little tools or little code pens, or you know, if we're able to do anything more when possible, because formats like SVG, they're perfect for tooling. It's like you said, Dave, it's just XML. It's just an outline, basically. It's the easiest thing to work with.
Mm-hmm. To modify. It is ripe for tooling, because it's so I don't know. It's not like JPEG, where the output is all just nothing, and totally. The average developer can't do anything. The average developer can look at it and see possibility and stuff.
You mentioned SVG OMG or SVG Optum. You know, there are these optimizers. Yeah. SVG OMG is kind of just a UI for these. SVG Optum or whatever.
Yeah.
SVGO. But I will confess, I plug my SVGs in here, and I don't know what any of the switches do. You know what I mean? And
totally.
So it's kind of super complex, and that, you know, I could burn a full week like figuring out what each one of those does. And, you know, I just kind of toggle some I try to get all the toggles I can on before it messes up. But, you know,
That looks good. That's a lot smaller.
but there can be some kind of adverse effects. You know, I guess like how. I mean, you said you wrote your own optimizer, but like how can a lay person kind of understand all the optimizations that need to go into it, you know, before production?
Totally. Dave, I have been the same way for most of the time that I've used SVGs. And actually, when I was creating this course, I realized there are some of these optimizations in SVGO that I have no idea about. And I ended up dedicating a whole section of the course to optimization and actually just going down that entire list in SVG OMG. It was funny, I found that some, like maybe a couple of the optimizations are basically, like they do nothing now. They're completely obsolete. They have no examples in the documentation or in the GitHub kind of like tests. That do anything. So it's almost as though we're all just like, oh yeah, this is great. I just kind of let it do its thing. It's nice that it has all of these options. It's almost like nobody really knew what every single one of them did. So I was pretty determined to get to the bottom of it. And also, like, I still use SVG OMG. My optimizer, which is called SVGito, it works really well before SVG OMG, but it's not trying to replace it. They work really well in tandem. You know, when it comes to figuring out how to approach optimization, I think that there are really two ways to do it. The first is if you just don't have the time, or you just don't really care, or you just don't want to get into all of the details, using a plugin like the Sketch SVGO compressor, it gets you at least halfway to a great SVG. And it's completely automatic. It runs in the background whenever you export an SVG. It's almost instantaneous.
Yeah, I installed it. I thought it was kind of cool, you know, just... Now SVG that's generated by Sketch uses it automatically. It doesn't ask. It doesn't do anything.
Yeah. And, you know, if you're a developer, you can go in and change which optimizations are on, which is kind of cool. But the other approach is go through SVG OMG. You're like, you know, care about how something is output. I often find that when I'm, say, creating an icon set, every single icon is a little different, and I want its markup to be different. So, so ultimately, the cool thing about optimization, like you said, Dave, when it comes to SVG, is it's not magic. It's not like compressing a PNG or a JPEG. It's just a series of little operations on text. It's like saying, okay, I'm going to remove every single ID attribute unless it's in the defs area. Mm-hmm. Or it's saying, okay, a zero isn't required before a decimal point. Say you have an opacity of like 0.5, you don't need to write 0.5. So it's pretty easy to create an optimization that just, and there is one in SVG OMG, that just removes that zero. And so you can kind of shrink an SVG in all these little ways. Some are more dramatic than others, but it's just so cool that for people like us, it's not rocket science. It's no longer kind of magic happening inside a black box.
That stuff feels good. It feels like there's literally no difference between 0.5 and 5. And then I think developers kind of get that and whatever. But then there's other ones like that are in middle ground. Like, I'm going to change the decimal precision. Well, that that's good because you can lose a lot of file size that way. But it is actually affecting the data in that.
Yeah,
file
visual. Over. Yeah.
And then there's like, I'll strip IDs. I broke something. And then there's other things like that aren't related to the optimization of the SVG. But like, I designed an icon that, you know, is butts right up against the view box, and then I like want a 1 pixel stroke around, or you know, 1 unit stroke around it. Oh, it gets cut off on the left side. Yep. So that was something that I needed to like learn and be trained with. That, and then you're like, where did I screw it up? Did the optimizer screw it up? Did I screw it up? How do I fix it?
Yeah,
there's just a million
what we're getting at here is really like SVG isn't easy. It's awesome and it's super capable, and honestly, it's gotten a lot easier, but it's still like there's only a certain amount that you can simplify it, or only a certain amount
because as much as there's best practices, there's kind of not really. You need to understand what's going on.
Yeah.
Sometimes you want to do it one way and sometimes you don't. I mean, for example, on that, I kind of generally prefer, I guess, usually my SVGs to be pretty butted up against the outside. Because that way, when I want to align it with like along the left, I'm not fighting some arbitrary distance of space. But then, you know, there's a lot of best practices out there that really say, no, never do that. Because just even some like browser painting algorithms can cut off stuff anyway. Yeah. It's like, you should give a little bit, like 10% of space around all your things. Like, I don't want that. I don't want 10% space. How do I align anything with 10% space?
Right. It's... You know, and what you get into there is design decisions. It's no longer a technical decision. The 1 pixel, or I mean, sometimes I just add at least 1 pixel so that browser cropping doesn't happen. But beyond that, yeah, it's totally got to be a design decision. It's one of the reasons why you know, so much of what we've just been talking about sounds very developer-y, but a lot of designers like need to know this. We're the ones who, like you said, Dave, it all starts in a design tool. Or actually, Chris, you said that, but I know Dave writes his path data by hand. So if it all starts there, then the person who's using that design tool, it really needs to be responsible for understanding some of this stuff. It's you know, SVG more than I think any other kind of any other format is a collaboration between design and development.
Fantastic. I wonder if we could use some of the last time to talk a little bit about icons, because I just think that's on every developer's mind a little bit. So that's part of a workflow too. Is it different or unique? Does Sketch offer anything particularly great? I know it has symbols, right? So is that how you always approach it, with like, I'm going to make every one of my icons a symbol, or do you make it a different document? Because doesn't Sketch have a limitation that you can't like use symbols like cross document?
You cannot currently use symbols cross document. There are some plugins and workarounds like Craft that kind of start to blur that line. But really, symbols are great when it comes to icons. And the nice thing about Sketch is you can just kind of keep adding artboards, keep adding pages. Unlike Illustrator, you're not going to come up against a kind of an arbitrary limit of artboards or kind of an arbitrary size of your project. So yeah, when it comes to icons, I often start just messing around with an icon, maybe within a mock-up, try and figure out what would look right. Then once I've got it sorted out, I move that into its own artboard. I often make that a symbol and start populating it into other mockups. And when it comes time to export an SVG, sometimes you can just export that symbol's master artboard. But a lot of the time, I still like to do a little bit of work to prepare the artwork for SVG. So I always create a duplicate of that artboard. If Sketch users are listening and trying this as we talk, be sure to change that, to convert that duplicated symbol artboard into an artboard, and so that it's no longer a symbol. You can kind of inadvertently duplicate a bunch of symbols and without realizing it. But the
tricky because symbol means something in SVG.
Right. And actually, that's really worth talking about. So working with icons in Sketch can be that straightforward. There are certain workarounds for changing the color of different symbols. I often only have a few colors that an icon needs to be and just kind of create a different symbol for each of those. But I've always got like one artboard in Sketch that is like my single source of truth. And often it doesn't really matter what color that icon is. All that matters is how it's constructed. Mm-hmm. Because when I export it as an SVG, I honestly, the first thing I do is either open it up in CodePen or open it up in an optimizer and then into CodePen. And I swear Chris hasn't paid me anything to talk about CodePen this much. I'm just a huge fan. I honestly don't think I would have.
Peter also
about...
didn't pay us to tell us.
I honestly don't think I would have learned SVG if it wasn't for CodePen and kind of having such a forgiving and real time kind of playground to work with them. But Chris, what you and I and so many other people have been talking about a lot recently are sprite sheets. And have symbol elements in an SVG, which are actually kind of similar to a symbol in Sketch, are really
they're
one
meant,
of
the, they're designed to be cloned and repeated.
Yeah, they're like really the best way to do so many things. I even encounter situations where like I want to use CSS and it would be like really simple to just like have a class that adds an icon in. But sometimes they're like the benefits of having a kind of a quasi inline SVG via a symbol element and a use element is it's really the best way to go. I think it's a perfect middle ground for most projects. So yeah, I've got a all of my icon sets turn into SVG sprite sheets. And I created a CodePen template that kind of makes that workflow really easy. You just paste in your SVG
so the sprite
elements.
I think this is worth talking about because this is kind of a cool pen, but Sketch can make you a folder full of SVGs because you can export them all, but it can't make a sprite sheet, can it? Or is there a plugin for it? Or?
I haven't seen a plugin, and I'm not aware of any design tool that does create a sprite sheet. You do have to rely on either a GUI tool like IcoMoon or a build process, or you just write it yourself, which is kind of what I prefer because it's actually really pretty straightforward. And like I was saying, you know, every single icon isn't the same. I often find that when I use a tool or if I use a tool like IcoMoon, it just kind of applies all of this, you know, it flattens all of my files and all of my graphics down in different ways. And it's like, no, like trust that I can make my SVG the way that it should be, like as efficient as possible, or exactly, you know, it's like maybe I want this to remain a stroke, not be a filled in shape. So I created this CodePen template, and you just kind of paste your elements in to the symbol elements, and it automatically shows you what those symbols look like. And you just paste it into the top of your web page.
It's pretty cool. Like, you get the sprite, which was created from you by some build, probably a gulp kind of thing. And then you can just drop it in there, and it'll, because once you have the sprite, it's actually not that obvious what to do with it. Because if you just drop it on an HTML page, you don't see nothing. That's the whole point. So what you want is like, did this work right? Can I look at all these, please? Now that this has already been done, and your pen does exactly that. You take the sprite, you drop it in there, some JavaScript, yada, 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 and it shows you what's in the sprite.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. Make sure everything looks right and is this kind of final output of the thing to be used.
I mean, it's an example of like going back to tools. I'm not that great at JavaScript, but I was able to create this and kind of refine it over a number of my own projects. And it really simplifies the process of making a sprite sheet and making sure that it looks the way it should. So, you know, I'm just such an advocate of all of us doing little things like that.
Yeah. Cool. So, everything's a symbol. You make a sprite sheet. This is kind of a side. We could probably wrap up here in a second. We'll do that. But the you don't have to make a sprite sheet either. You know, and that's just to complicate things even more. I've started to become a fan more and more of that, of this idea that like just leave your folders alone and kind of just include them as needed, which gives you
nothing wrong with that. Yeah.
No. But there's some kind of appeal to the system as well, because the sprite sheet can be cached, and it just gives an organization kind of like, see, these are the ones that are available to you. Please use them as you will, which is it's kind of nice to have like a output from your system.
And a lot of icon sets actually tend to have duplicated elements. So, in one of my icon sets, I've got an arrow, and then I need an arrow that goes top, down, left, right, and I just use a use element from one of the other symbols in the sprite sheet and rotate it. And it's so I think the larger your icon set is, the more efficient it can be to actually have it all in one place. It can kind of all reference itself. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with independent graphics, and there's nothing wrong with just pasting in an SVG as an inline bit of code on your website. That's sometimes the best way to go.
The way to go, which is this whole other set of like best practices and systems that you have to kind of know, you know. And it's funny how you learn this stuff. You learn it kind of piecemeal as you go, and it takes a while to develop kind of a big chunk of understanding of the
thing. What's the on ramp for learning this stuff? There is a lot of nuance. Like, is it a month, 2 months, 6 years?
Well, I thought it was kind of a softball into the ending of the show with the Sketch Master.
There you go. Yeah.
Oh, hey.
How could we learn about all this
in a mere 2 hours? No. I mean, honestly, it kind of depends. How much you want to grapple with it yourself. This is like probably 4 years of grappling with it, compressed into a roughly 2 hour course, maybe two and a half. The on ramp for my training is kind of just like, if you've got a basic familiarity, kind of the fundamentals of using Sketch, then you're good to go. I really wanted to make this accessible for people who were not developers. If you are a developer, I think the on-ramp is even easier. And if you're, you know, an experienced icon designer, for example, which is what so many SVGs are just used for, I think that on-ramp gets even easier. But, It's like the name of Chris's talk from a couple of years ago. It's like SVG is for everybody. And we need these different on-ramps that kind of like help front-end developers get into it and help designers get into it. Help maybe data visualization people get into it. And so I've just tried to create like one more ramp. And I think that going through the course, reading the articles, using stuff in one's own projects probably would take a couple days, and it's a lot better than 4 years of struggling with it yourself. And I have to say, when we all do that, we come up with certain workflows and assumptions that aren't always correct. And one thing that I always appreciate when I write an article or when I create a course is I have to challenge those assumptions. For example, it's like, oh, well, I always convert my borders to outlines. It's just always the best way to do it. Well, let's challenge that assumption before we start training hundreds of other people on that, you know? Right. So, I've really tried to do my best to figure out really what the best way is to do all this from a design perspective.
Well, cool. On that note, I do think we have to wrap up. People are probably sitting in their driveways on the way home from work. So Peter, can people follow you, give you money if they're not already doing that?
Yeah, people can find me at sketchmaster.com or my own website is pnowell.com, NOWELL.com. And there's the Sketchmaster courses. And I write a lot of articles on Medium. I've got links on both of those websites. And I'm on Twitter as P. Noel Design. You can really just go to sketchmaster.com and find a link to any of those.
All right. Well, cool. I know I'm absolutely flooded here with SVG feels. So thank you very much for coming on the show. Thank you, dear listener, for downloading this in your podcatcher of choice. Be sure to star heart favorite it up. That's how people find out about the show. Follow us on Twitter at Shop Talk Show for tens of tweets a month. Maybe 11. Who knows if it's a long month. And if you hate your job, head over to shoptalkshow.com/jobs. Get a brand new one. There's a lot of jobs right now, so you should definitely check that out. And maybe there's an SVG one. You should check it out. And Chris, do you have anything else you'd like to share?
Oh!
Shoptalkshow.com.